This morning, I'd like to talk about Joseph. There's basically no character in the Bible that gets as much attention, as much layer, as much depth and complexity as Joseph. And this morning, I want to focus on four points in his life. Four choices that he made, how he came to make those choices, and their consequences. We start way back at the beginning. Joseph has just gotten his coat of many colors. He is clearly and explicitly the favorite of 12 sons, and he has two dreams. One in which 11 stalks of corn bow down to a 12th, and another in which 11 stars bow down to a 12th star. And what's more, Joseph is not just a dreamer, but he's an interpreter of dreams, and he knows what they mean. They mean that one day he will dominate. He will be the master of his brothers. He is that 12th stalk of corn, that 12th star. What's more, before Joseph tells his brother about these dreams, the Bible tells us that the brothers hated him so that they could not speak a friendly word to him. Genesis 37, verse 4. Could not speak a friendly word, and he hasn't even shared the dreams yet. So when I set this scene, thinking about the choice of Joseph to share these dreams, because yes, he had them, yes, he knows what they mean, but he takes it one step further and goes and tells his brother, yeah, one day I'm going to dominate all of you. Why would he do that? My first reaction is that he's blind. How could he not see that telling his brothers these dreams would only enrage them? How could he miss it? And then I remember another important fact that the Bible tells us about Joseph at this time. He's 17. Wasn't making a lot of great choices in general. And what's more, he's his father's favorite. He's constantly rewarded for his actions, told that everything he does is right. In this context, how could he not share the dreams? Whether it was because he wanted to let the brothers know that one day he would be the boss and they should stop picking on him. You know, one day you're going to work for me. Or maybe it was just he was so overwhelmed with this amazing dream that he had to share it with someone. Whatever the reason, 17-year-old Joseph, realizing that he can dream the future, understand what that means, believes he should tell his brothers about it. And we know what the end result is. The consequences are the brothers nearly kill him, and only their greed stops them as they sell him into slavery. The very same brothers that he is supposed to rule over sell him into slavery. Fast forward, and we get to Potiphar's house. Now, Joseph is really a lemons into lemonade kind of guy. He's been sold into slavery, but he doesn't just become any slave. He becomes the head slave, the master of the house of Egypt's second-in-command, Potiphar. Everything that Potiphar has, Joseph also has. And again, the Bible adds another fact about Joseph. It says, and I quote, that he is handsome and well-built. Young, handsome, well-built, and shrewd. He's able to become head of the household. And Potiphar's wife takes a liking to him. Repeatedly tries to pull him aside and said, let's be together. Repeatedly. Until finally one day Joseph comes home. All of the rest of the servants are gone. No one's in the house. And Potiphar's wife demands that Joseph lie with her. And he looks her in the face and says no. Joseph, who was Jacob's spy for his brothers, Joseph, who felt that it was his job to share with everyone how he was going to be the boss of everyone, has experienced some hardship. He's experienced what it's like to not have, to be a slave. And it's given him some moral strength, and he says no. And think about it. Potiphar is the second in command of Egypt. In all likelihood, his wife probably looked pretty good. And young, handsome, well-built Joseph says, I can't do that to my master. It would be wrong. He doesn't say, I don't want to. He says, it would be wrong to do that. This guy has taken care of me. He's given me everything that's his. I can't betray him. And again, we know the consequences. He gets thrown in jail. Eventually, we know through his power of dream interpretation, he is released, and he himself becomes the second in command of Egypt. He lays an elaborate trap for his brothers in which eventually everything gets worked out, and at last, his clan of 70, led by Jacob, are going to join him in Egypt. And he makes another interesting choice. He tells his brothers and father, when you go before Pharaoh, tell him that you're shepherds. Tell him that you're shepherds because Egyptians abhor shepherds. He'll put all of you together in one land. All of the Jews will live in Goshen. You'll all live together. Joseph, who has become so Egyptian that his own brothers literally don't recognize him, who's married an Egyptian woman, who runs the Egyptian country, tells his brothers and father, tell them you're a shepherd because then no Egyptian will talk to you. Tell them you're shepherds because then you'll be separated out. You'll all live in one place. Again, we don't know entirely why. Maybe Joseph just wants it easy. He wants to give them the best of everything, and it's easier if they're all in one place. Maybe it's the opposite. Maybe Joseph is the cool new Egyptian. He's up with the latest styles. He looks like one of them and is embarrassed by his starving, ragged family as they come down from the old country. And he wants to keep them separate so he isn't embarrassed by them. Or maybe even the opposite. Maybe he feels embarrassed because he's become so Egyptian his family doesn't recognize him. Maybe he feels the loss and shame of losing his Judaism, his connection to his family. And he doesn't want that for his family. He wants them to be able to maintain, to stay separate, to maintain their Jewish identity. Whatever the case, we know that that's what he decides. And we know the consequence of all of the Jews living together in Goshen is that it is that much easier for the future pharaohs to oppress and enslave them. A little bit farther, we get to the very last verses of the book of Genesis. And Joseph does something very curious. He makes the entire clan promise that when they return to Israel, when they leave Egypt, they'll take his body with them. They'll take his bones with them. Now, this is strange for two reasons. First, Jacob, his father, asked the same thing, but Jacob didn't say, wait until everyone goes back. Jacob said, as soon as I die, take my body back to the Machpelah so I can be buried there. Why does Joseph want to wait? And second, we learn in the next verse that Joseph gets his body embalmed, which is an Egyptian process. In fact, in most cases, it's forbidden by Jewish law to have your body embalmed. What was he doing? I think Joseph was trying to prevent exactly what happened. Joseph looked around and realized he had groomed no successor. There was no next Jewish advisor to Pharaoh who was going to protect the Jewish people. So he wanted to do two things with the last part of himself, with the body he would leave behind on earth. The first is he had himself embalmed to say to the Egyptians, remember, I'm Jewish and I'm one of you. I look like you, I act like you, I talk like you, I die like you. We Jews are not so different. Remember to take care of us. And two, he wants to remind the Jews that they are different. Remember, this is a temporary stop. You have to go back to Israel. You could only be here for a little while. This is a sojourn. And we know that the consequences are almost nothing. There's no record of any Egyptian having anything to do with Joseph after that. In fact, the new pharaohs rise up, and it says they knew not Joseph and forget the Jews. And Joseph's body, yes, is taken back to Israel ultimately in the very end, but he gets about a half a verse. One sentence, and it seems to have no effect on the Jewish people at all. So what do we learn from these four choices? The decision to tell his brothers about his dreams, to say no to Potiphar's wife, to separate the Jews, and to demand his body return to Israel. I learned three things. The first is that I love the character of Joseph. What a complex, layered, confusing human person. I feel like I know him like I know myself, like one of you, like a family member. A glimpse of real, true, complex reality. Two, I think there is a difference between his two early choices and his two later choices. In both the instance of telling his brothers about the dream and about Potiphar's wife, they are, in the moment, passionate choices. Joseph is overwhelmed by this new gift of dream reading. Joseph has no plan to avoid Potiphar's wife. In fact, she tries again and again until finally he has to just say no. But later in life are two very well thought out, politically strategic moves. Separating the Jewish people, he goes through many steps. You'll tell the Pharaoh this, I'll guarantee you this land, we'll get you separated like this. And when he dies, the body is embalmed. He gets all of the people together and promises them it's a long-term plan. We learn that Joseph, over time, learns to be more careful about his choices. Which leads me to the third lesson. Joseph, after Jacob dies, his brothers are worried that Joseph is going to kill them. You know, maybe you only kept us alive because our dad is still alive. And he basically says, no, it's all part of God's plan. Don't worry about it. This, in many ways, you can read this entire story as being a message that our choices don't matter, that God's plan is what works out in the end. That fate and destiny are the rule. No matter how bad things get, no matter how many jail cells and slavery situations you're in, God's plan will win out. And yet, what happens to Joseph throughout his life? He becomes a more strategic thinker. For someone who constantly is thrown into more and more disastrous situations and yet continues to thrive, instead of just throwing his lot to fate, he becomes a more careful decision maker. He becomes more strategic. Because Joseph is modeling for us exactly how we might hold on to two directly opposing opposite ideas that are both present in the Bible. The first is that everything is God's plan. Fate and destiny rule all. And that is the hope. No matter how bad things get, Andrew Lloyd Webber wrote his song, "Close Every Door to Me." Children of Israel are never alone. No matter how bad things get, we know God is on our side and eventually it will get better. And yet, on the same note, we have what we have. God gave us free will, the ability to make decisions, to make choices. And we must do our best to make the best choices. That's the pragmatism. That's the realism. We live in this world. We're here now. We have to do our best to make the best of it. So Joseph is shouting from our parsha from 3,000 years ago to say, don't give up on hope and faith. Fate and destiny are real. Things can and will work out. And at the same time, in your other hand, don't give up on the next minute, on the next choice. Every day, every moment, we have to make choices, and we have to do our best to make them the best we can be. We don't know for sure what the consequences will be, but we have to do our best. So as we conclude the book of Genesis, I wish each of us the strength to hold on to these two opposite ideas, one in each hand. Faith, hope, and destiny. Realism, pragmatism, and choice. Shabbat Shalom.